Our last case for this morning is Albu v. Holder, 1328-64. Ms. Toon?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is June Tun, and I represent the appellant, Mr. Albu. This case is about whether the written and oral advisals on an asylum application constitute sufficient notice when the advisals were not translated at all, or that, at the very least, translated incorrectly.
But do we know that? I mean, what we do know here is that Mr. Albu misrepresented some very obvious points, such as the date when he entered the United States. And, you know, it seems to me that somebody shouldn't, I mean, you know, you're under oath in general. I can't believe he thought he was free to just lie. I mean, it's hard to say that the immigration judge's finding that this was false material and he knew he was doing it is wrong.
Your Honor, I agree with that. But in this case, Mr. Albu is not saying that it was knowingly that he misrepresented these facts. What he is stating is that he didn't receive notice.
Well, I don't understand the difference, but I mean, if he knows he's not supposed to misrepresent things.
That's correct, Your Honor. But the other part of the notice element is that if you represent a frivolous application, that you will be permanently barred from receiving any types of immigration benefits in the future. So there are.
Is it your theory then that because the interpreter was part of the scheme, that the interpreter had an interest in, of course, not telling him about misrepresenting, so we are to infer that the interpreter did not translate that portion?
Yes, Your Honor, in the fact that that's the only thing we can do is infer because we don't have the actual interpreter here.
I believe that the respondent in the record says that he was also given the warning in writing in his native language. Do you dispute that?
I do dispute that, Your Honor. When they go to an asylum interview, they don't receive the actual writing in their native language. They're allowed to bring a translator, and this translator orally was supposed to translate the written advisals. And so he did receive the advisals in English, but the very purpose of the translator in this case was so that he would be able to understand the advisals in his own native language.
So we just make the inference that since those were criminals in an enterprise filing false applications, that they would not have translated it properly?
It certainly wouldn't serve their best interest, Your Honor, in translating it properly. But Mr. Albu was asked by the immigration judge several times whether or not these advisals were translated to him by the interpreter. And Mr. Albu stated repeatedly that he does not remember that these advisals were ever given to him. And so, unfortunately, we don't have anything concrete other than what Mr. Albu has testified to and the results.
And he did testify that when he met I forget his name now, who was indicted.
Mr. Saikhan.
Right. When he met him, that he was told you need to be from California and you need to misstate the date of entry. He admitted that later, right?
He did admit all of the misrepresentations when he was given the opportunity to. In fact, he stated that when he initially went to Mr. Saikhan, the attorney, he told him about his story about him being ethnically Hungarian in Romania. But it was the attorney that told him he needed to, quote-unquote, enhance his story. And so this is an attorney.
In order to get his application approved.
Exactly. And so whether these advisements were given is purely an afterthought when you think of the fact that the actual attorney is advising him to enhance his story.
Well, to lie,
right.
To get his application
processed. Exactly.
And he's doing that willingly, right?
That's correct.
To get his application
approved.
That is
correct. He did do that willingly, but in the matter of YL, the board has stated there's a four-part test. The very first requirement of that test is notice. And so because of the fact that notice is a requirement, all the other negative aspects in this case, which is all the misrepresentation, cannot outweigh the fact that he didn't receive notice.
Well, there's speculation about this. I mean, I think you can't get beyond that. He does receive notice, whether it penetrates his mind or not. He sees the English notice. We have the evidence that the Romanian interpreter says that they translated it into Romanian. You've speculated that maybe it wasn't an honest translation. Our normal assumption is that translations are reliable. We look at them all the time in courts and couldn't actually function in either the criminal law or the immigration area or many other fields without interpreters. And I guess I'm just concerned that you don't have anything other than speculation about something like this. I mean, he's offered notice in two ways. And our issue is whether you need to come up with something better than that to show that the notice wasn't effective.
I agree, Your Honor. In the normal case, all that would apply, and a translator is certifying that they're translating correctly. But in this case, there was 1,272 fraudulent asylum applications. And it was, in fact, in the documents that the government submitted.
But that doesn't mean the notice was bad. It could be that there were 1,000 and so whatever it was, people who were hoping they could slip through the system.
I agree, Your Honor. But in this specific instance, the translator's certification may be given little weight, given the fact that he, in fact, was a part of this big scheme and, in fact, received the largest sentence. He received 6 years in comparison to 4 years that the attorneys received for this. The interpreter was found to have several seals, several documents, several falsified documents at his own home in which he helped the attorney perpetrate this fraud. And although Mr. Albu did willingly misrepresent things, he didn't receive the notice. Being that the penalty
we don't know that, right? The problem that I have, Ms. Toon, is your client just says he doesn't remember being given the required notice. And it seems to me that in our review, the question is whether the evidence required the immigration judge to find that he did not receive notice. And I have a hard time reaching that point.
Your Honor, in other cases in which our court has held that the written and oral advisals are enough, the appellants in those cases stated that they fully understand English and that a certified translator read through each and every line with them.
But this is a different point. This is a credibility determination that the immigration judge makes when he says, I don't recall if this happened. And the immigration judge makes the call. Now, somebody has to make that call. Either he's telling the truth and he really has no recollection of it, or these various efforts at giving him notice, in fact, did happen and he remembers it and he's just not telling the truth. But we normally defer to the finding of the person who's on the spot for questions like that.
Yes, Your Honor, but the record does reflect that the judge carefully went through all of the other three elements. He went through whether it was knowingly misrepresented. He went through whether he had an opportunity to correct the misrepresentations. But when it comes to the notice, he asked them whether or not the translator translated. Mr. Albu stated, no, he does not recall. Other than that, there's nothing that Mr. Albu could have presented to the judge other than his own recollection. And I do believe
the judge might think because of all these other misrepresentations, you know, maybe he's... I mean, what else are you going to ask somebody who says, I don't remember? You could keep asking them, but that's not helpful. I mean, he just has to decide.
That's correct. But as the role of the judge, he has the job of weighing everything that's presented to him. Mm-hmm. The evidence that was presented by the government lays out that all the negative fraud that was perpetrated by his attorney and the translator, and that he should have weighed all that evidence with Mr. Albu's words. And albeit Mr. Albu did misrepresent a lot of things, had he received the notice, he may or may not have continued with this fraud.
And well, so that's the assumption. But I mean, when somebody says, I don't remember, we see a lot of deposition transcripts where there's a lot of follow-up questioning about that. But one of the questions, in essence, is to the effect that if you had been warned, if you had been told this, is it the kind of thing that would have stuck in your mind? I don't see any indication of that. He was obviously willing to go forward with an attempted fraud on the United States, willingly, deliberately, knowing that surely there would be some sanctions, just not, there's some issue about how certain we are that he knew he would have a lifetime ban. But who knows whether he would have remembered if he had been told this.
I see the light is on. Can I finish?
Please.
Your Honor, I agree with you in your statement in that if someone is perpetrating the fraud, Mr. Albu, he should know that there should be some type of consequence. But in this case, the consequence is so severe. It's to permanently bar him from any type of immigration benefits. He now has a United States citizen daughter. And in any other case, she would be able to petition for him, and with the deportation on his record, he would be able to obtain a waiver after 10 years. But because the frivolous asylum bar has been applied, he does not receive any type of immigration benefits ever.
I understand.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms.
Thank
Chun.
You, Your Honor.
Welcome back, Ms. Melnick.
Good morning again, Your Honors. Karen Melnick on behalf of the Attorney General. No record evidence compels reversal of this frivolous finding, where a petitioner claims that he doesn't remember being given the advisals, but the undisputed record evidence shows that he signed both the asylum application and the oath during his interview and have the consequences for filing a frivolous application. In fact, it is an unchallenged agency finding that he does not recall. It's only now, with new counsel and on appeal, that this argument regarding, well, one could try to infer that the translation wasn't done or wasn't done correctly, but there's absolutely no evidence of that in the record. He doesn't dispute that he signed the I-589, which is the asylum application that has the frivolous warnings. He doesn't dispute that he signed the record of appellant oath during an interview on January 4th of 2004, which also has the warnings. To say now that I don't remember would render the advisals meaningless if everyone could simply come in and say, well, I don't remember, and somehow that's good enough. So based on the fact that counsel doesn't dispute the other three procedural safeguards for finding a frivolous application, it's only this notice one, and based on the evidence, there is substantial evidence. And therefore, the court should deny the petition for review. Thank you very much, unless there's any questions.
No, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Your time expired, Ms. Chun, so we will take this case under advisement, and the court will be in recess.